How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
On today's show, life without Jay Crowder is not good, and neither is Marcus Smart's shooting. Let's go.
It's time. You want the best Celtics talk around? Here it is. This is the Rain and Jay's podcast. Here's John and Jay.
All right, let's do this, because Jay and I have been talking for 10 minutes before we even started this actual show about a bunch of other things. But let's talk about the Celtics, Jay King. The Celtics, they won. They won a game. And we were waiting to do the show until they won a game. It's basically because we haven't... Schedule-wise, we've been a little bit behind. We're recording late on a Sunday. But the Celtics beat the 76ers. That's got to count for something, right?
Yeah, a win. You know, but here's the thing. Jay Crowder's injury came at the worst possible time. To play against Kevin Durant and Paul George and the Toronto Raptors, including DeMar DeRozan, without Crowder is... very, very tough. And so he picked like the worst time to sprain his ankle, and Celtics ran into three really good teams, got beaten by three really good teams, and then kind of finally got a win against Philadelphia. They played really well for one quarter, really well at the end, and that was enough against Philadelphia. Yeah. So
that was
hasn't been a great set of games since Crowder went out, but nice to get back on the winning track against the 76ers. Always nice to see them when you're on a losing
team. Yeah, it's really perfect timing for the Boston Celtics. Like you said, really could not have been a more critical time for Jay Crowder to go down, because not only did he go down when all of this was happening, you've got a nice easy stretch of games. Not easy stretch, but much easier stretch for the Atlanta Hawks. The Celtics, I think, amongst all of the teams in that jumble for 3-6 seeding, the Celtics probably have the toughest schedule remaining. And that included, of course, the games against Toronto and Oklahoma City and Indiana, who has been a matchup. That Indiana team is a matchup problem for the Celtics at full strength. So regardless of their record, Indiana is a tough matchup for the Celtics. So they've got a tough schedule. Atlanta has now moved ahead of Boston. Miami currently ahead of Boston. So really, the big question right now for Boston is, how far can they go? How far can they drop? Where do they end up? Because this was the 70th game of the season. There's 12 games left. There's not much time to make up any ground that's lost here. So where do they end up when the playoffs come around?
I mean, it could be anywhere from 3 to probably 6. I would guess they probably won't slip to 7th. They're 3 games ahead of the Pacers with just 12 games to play. That'd be tough. But them, Miami, and Charlotte are all within 1.5 games of each other. So last 12 games, really critical. The Celtics still have that 5-game road trip to the West. There are a couple of like games they should win there in Phoenix against the Lakers. But still, then there's the Warriors, the Blazers, the Clippers. So that's a tough trip. And, you know, it's not going to be easy, especially if Crowder misses a lot of time. He sounded really optimistic about returning before the team anticipates him returning. But I kind of always expected Crowder to be like, yeah, I'm ready to play. I'm ready to play. And they'll probably be more cautious with him, because obviously need him in the playoffs, don't necessarily need him now. They could land anywhere from 6th to 3rd, I would guess. They should rather have the
sixth seed, I think, than fourth or fifth. Regardless of home court advantage, you're probably better off playing the Cavaliers at the earliest in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think that should be probably their biggest worry. But and as long as they get healthy, I think they can compete against anyone else, including the Raptors, in a seven-game series. But they've got to get healthy. They've got to get Crowder back. Jarebko's absence also has been really huge just because they don't have the ability anymore to go small, really at all, especially with Kelly Olynyk kind of struggling. He can give them that small ball feel, but he hasn't hit shots since coming back from that shoulder injury. And, yeah, I'm starting to ramble a little bit, but that's where we are with 12 games left
in
the season.
It's not an easy road for Boston. And this West Coast swing that they have at the end here, that is brutal. That is a brutal trip. They have to win that Phoenix game. They have to win that Phoenix game. And so they've got Orlando tomorrow. So they got Orlando on a back-to-back, and they've had trouble with Orlando. And they're going to play Toronto again. And you got to hope that Toronto will rest somebody, and maybe they can steal a game there, because with the Clippers, Portland, and Golden State, they've got Golden State on a back-to-back. And I know the Celtics have been great on a back-to-back, but, oh, Jesus, that's insane. They've got to win that Phoenix game. They've got to win that Lakers game. They have a stretch at the end of the season. They play at the Lakers, and they come home, and they play New Orleans at home. These are all must-win games. New Orleans at home, Milwaukee at home, at Atlanta, Charlotte, and Miami. They've got three games to end the season against teams that they're competing against for playoff positioning. They do hold the tiebreaker against Miami and Charlotte no matter what. So I think it's a tough, tough stretch. That Miami game, by the way, Miami's on a back-to-back. They are at Detroit the game before, so that's nice. Charlotte, when they play Boston, is on a back-to-back, so advantageous as far as that goes schedule-wise. So, but the bottom line is, life without Crowder is not good. And if of all people to get hurt, the most versatile guy you have, the most irreplaceable guy, there's not a single player on this roster that can duplicate anything that Crowder does. And what I find most interesting is that I feel like Crowder's impact on the offense is much bigger than anybody could have anticipated coming into the season. I think the offense looks really lost without Crowder.
Yeah, I mean, it has hurt them too that Avery Bradley started slumping and Marcus Smart has barely hit anything in March and Kelly Olynyk still hasn't found a shot since the injury. But that being said, Crowder was, along with Isaiah Thomas, one of the two guys who gave them consistency every night. And he gave them points every night. He was really efficient offensively. He has been all season. He's knocked down outside shots. He's done a lot for them. And as you said, his versatility, nobody else gives him that. Nobody else can slide over to the four, with the exception of Jarebko, and give them small lineups that are tough to match up against. And small lineups that are better shooting wise. And obviously we've seen them have a real dip in shooting. We've seen them really struggle to manufacture points consistently. And that was especially noticeable against the top teams like the Thunder and the Raptors. They were just rolled by the Thunder and had no answer for the Raptors except for like that stretch, I guess, from the late second quarter to the end of the third. Other than that, those two games were really ugly. And the game in Indiana was just a slugfest between two teams that couldn't score. I thought the Indiana game especially showed how much Crowder's impact has had on the offense. The Pacers paid no mind to Marcus Smart, Jared Sullinger, Amir Johnson on the perimeter, and had like three guys all over Isaiah Thomas whenever he went to the basket. And it just really bogged down everything. Yeah, Crowder is really important. He just does so many things for them. And his impact, I think is even more noticeable now that he's out than it was, you know, when he was doing all those things on the court.
Yeah. So basically, we need Crowder back, like ASAP. Let's talk about Marcus Smart.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
One more thing I would say that his impact's at the bench. You know, one of their top things, I think, has been that they don't really throw out people who aren't at least pretty good at basketball. And I think the past few games trying out the young guys, and Terry Rozier, James Young, RJ Hunter, it's been like, okay, that bench isn't as formidable anymore. It doesn't have established guys and rugged guys and kind of, I guess, plus players everywhere. And especially with Tyler Zeller struggling like he has lately, that bench unit has looked bad on certain.
Yeah, no, it's.
So I think that's another. The depth there has really hurt them. And especially now that they have to try traditional lineups, those that haven't always been great. So it's a different feel for their team when Crowder's
out. And it's not, like you said before, it's not only just Crowder, it's Jarebko, and it's been Olynyk, who is basically not the same player as he was before. The Olynyk that we're seeing now is a shell of his former self. He still needs to get back into things. And that's, you know, look, the shoulder is that's a tough injury to come back from, and it's going to take him a little bit of time. So you're playing without Crowder, you're playing without Jarebko, you're playing with half an Olynyk, and everything else just kind of falls apart. And the Celtics need everything to be going well. They just don't have a single player that can take over in times of need. And as much as we love Isaiah Thomas, he still can't do the types of things that the as yet unnamed superstar that the Celtics need will be able to do. So when a guy gets hurt, you look at the Oklahoma City Thunder. When Kevin Durant got hurt, you have a Russell Westbrook on the team to step up and carry you and do ungodly things. There's no ungodly player on this team right now. You need everything to be working well. When everybody's healthy and everything's working well, this Celtics team can be really, really good. But when it's not, then they've got problems.
I say Isaiah Thomas has averaged more than 26 points in March, and it has been pretty ungodly.
No,
so,
but he hasn't done.
He's not Westbrook.
That's my point.
But how many guys are? I mean, as far as scoring goes, he's a monster.
Of course he is.
And he does it efficiently. He does it in the fourth quarter when they need it.
He's not that super.
He's not top five player
right.
in the league. Like,
that's what I'm talking about. That you can't, like, Isaiah Thomas has been efficient. He's been a good scorer and all of that stuff. He's been great. But you still see that in you can game plan. You can still stop Isaiah Thomas or limit Isaiah Thomas. You can still make him struggle a little bit. He can't take over. He can't carry the way a superstar can carry. You know what I mean? And it's not a knock on Isaiah Thomas. He's a really, really, really good player. But the Celtics need that guy, in quotes, that guy. And that's the type of guy they've been trying to trade for. That's why as soon as Kevin Durant said he likes Boston, that everybody went nuts, because that's the type of player we're talking about. We're talking about the type of player that, you know, when Danny Ainge traded for Kevin Garnett, that's the type of player we're talking about. So not a knock on Isaiah Thomas. He's just not that player. He's not that superstar level player. So I don't want to, you know, make it sound like I'm Tangway going off on Isaiah Thomas. Like, I love Isaiah. I think he's great. I think he does a lot of great things. But the Celtics need the carry the team no matter what double or triple teams you throw at the guy. He still does something absolutely amazing.
Fair enough. Talk about that Kevin Durant stuff.
Okay.
Let's talk. I thought that was interesting. That was definitely interesting. I thought the first time, you know, he was asked a question about Boston, and he answered positively because he's Kevin Durant. He's a nice guy. He wasn't going to say anything negatively. I wasn't, like, surprised about that. I thought, you know, he just said a nice thing. Whatever. Not a big deal.
Then he doubled down, though. The double down on ESPN when he said there's no tradition like the Boston Celtics. That's when you're like, is he flirting? Is he flirting? Because obviously he knew how people were going to react to those comments. And he later came and said, like, I'm not going to let people impact what I say. I'm going to say the truth. I'm going to say what I think. But that kind of felt like flirting. I'm not going to lie. The double down to me, and that's not to say he'll end up with the Celtics. That's not to say he will even strongly consider the Celtics. But if you are in the Celtics organization, that had to be, like, it must have been, they must have thought, who knows now? Because he was very, very complimentary, not just of the city, but also Brad Stevens. And he said that team obviously loves their coach, loves their system. So Durant notices that the Celtics are enjoying Brad Stevens. And that's pretty exciting if you're in the Celtics organization.
Yeah, I look.
Even if it's still a really long shot. I will say that. It's a really long shot, guys.
It's an obvious long shot. Obviously, it's a long shot. But you're right. He said a lot of really nice things. And it goes beyond, he tried to kind of recover when he said other things that he said, if you ask me about Philadelphia, yeah, I like Philadelphia too. But no, there are certain things that he said that at least signal a willingness. So he's not stupid. Let's just put that out there. Kevin Durant is a very smart guy. He knows exactly what he's talking about. He's not a newbie when it comes to the media. He knows exactly what his words sound like, and he's not misspeaking, and he's not making any sort of mistake. When he says these things, he means those things. And so, like you said, does that mean that he's coming to Boston? No. But does that mean that he'll refuse when Danny Ainge comes calling? No, he's not going to refuse. I think it's pretty obvious that he's intrigued by the situation in Boston. And whether that means anything or not, ultimately, who knows? But Kevin Durant is clearly, he notices what's going on in Boston. He notices what's going on with the team. All the stuff about enjoying the city and the family atmosphere, like that's all fine. But it's the stuff with the team that it really sticks out. And that, like you said, that quote about the tradition and the whole Celtics organization. So I'm telling myself not to expect Kevin Durant, but
I mean, nobody should expect Kevin Durant. Nobody should expect Kevin Durant in Boston. But, it was better that he said those things and did it the way he did, doubling down and being really complimentary about the coach, the system, and the system than it would have been if he had gone the other way.
Yeah.
So,
it's just something to watch. It's something to pay attention to.
Left the door. Open.
Yeah.
Get excited,
I'm not saying never, but
very excited at all. But
a little right. Because hey, you never know. But look, I just love thinking about kind of like the free agent version of the Kevin Durant trade, where you get Al Horford, and all of a sudden you start to put together a team, and he says, "Well, maybe," and whatever. But I don't want to go down that road. Let's just keep it in the back of your head. Who knows? But he's totally coming to Boston.
Yeah.
He's totally coming to Boston. All right. Let's move on, because we've got the irrational excitement over the Kevin Durant thing. We've gotten a bunch of questions here from people on Twitter. Let's start working those in here, because Marcus Smart has come up, and I think we need to address this. So Magnus tweeted, Smart will probably overtake Kobe for worst shooting percentage over the season tonight. Is that a reason to worry? And let's see. There was another smart tweet here that I got to get to. Is Marcus Smart destined to be a second unit Celtic? That's from Gareth Wood. So looking at Marcus Smart's numbers for the season, his shooting numbers are just not good at all. And in March, they've been worse than ever. And it's only been eight games. Well, this was nine games after tonight. This stat doesn't factor in tonight. I guarantee it's not going to make it any better. His true shooting percentage is 39% right now. His actual field goal percentage is just under 30%, and he's shooting 17% from three, worse than he was in November, worse than he was in December and January before he got into that famed blizzard snow day workout where he got himself up to about 33% for February. 17% from three this month so far. 17. That's Evan Turner shooting better than him right now.
Yeah, that's not great. Not great. And the thing is, he keeps shooting. So, like, when he goes through those massive slumps and is that cold, it really, really hurts you because he keeps shooting. He doesn't just shoot easy ones. He shoots tough ones. And, you know, it's too bad we have to talk about him after the Sixers game because he hit a big three. He was really good, I thought. You know, he took a couple guys in the post, Stauskas and Smith. He had a really nifty game, I thought, off the bounce. He played probably more point guard than he has most of the time and did a good job with it. So he had a really good game against the Sixers. But, yeah, his shooting's a real concern. And it's been a concern since he got in the NBA. And it's not just that he misses threes and takes a lot of them. It's that he hasn't yet figured out how to get good two-pointers either. And so the combination of him being a bad three-point shooter and at times this season historically bad, and the fact that he can't really manufacture easy points inside the arc most of the time is concerning. And I think Smart's still been helpful this year. His defense is outrageous. He has a tendency to make winning plays at opportune times. So he does a lot of really good things for the Celtics, even when he's not shooting well. But yeah, of course his shooting is a concern.
And it's hard to keep into perspective that this is only his second year, and both years he's missed significant time with injury. But there's still, you want to see more of an upward trend with his shooting. And yes, he was 2 of 6 from three tonight, so that's not bad. You know, it's about average, 33%. So that's okay. But he did take, like, for him to be taking six threes, that's not what you want. You don't want him taking that many shots from deep. Half of his shots came from three, and that's just too many. And one of the shots, I just remember one of the shots, he was a good 3 feet behind the line. So I don't know what happened. And tonight, I think he did get a message because I think he was a little more aggressive tonight than he has been in the past. He's not relying just on jumpers. Like tonight, I think he had a nice, you know, a post up. He drove a little bit more than usual. It's still a progression. You can't make any long-term determinations on Marcus Smart based on what we've seen so far, because this team is still in flux. We don't know what the team's going to look like next year. We don't know what he's going to need to do next year. And we don't know what kind of shots he's going to get next season with whatever team is constructed. So I think part of it for Smart is that he's kind of he's been playing in this turmoil. He started his career started with Rajon Rondo, so he has spanned a lot of different players. Maybe it's not so fair to make a lot of judgments about the types of shots that he's taking quite yet, but I'd still like to see him kind of, I just like to see him be more aggressive, more than anything. I like to see him drive more and get to the free throw line more. Not that that's going to get him a lot of easy shots, because he's not exactly making a ton of free throws either, but he's about 80%. It's not so bad, but I'd still like to see him get more aggressive and drive more.
I'm with you. And I do think that he needs to be smarter. Sometimes he goes in, doesn't seem to have a plan, and he just flings himself wildly, hoping for contact. So he needs to get smarter in a lot of ways. But I think he has progressed. There are a lot of ways he's progressed. And I think because he's shot so poorly from the outside, it's kind of masked some of the other steps he's taken. But he has gotten a lot niftier off the bounce. He's gotten a lot better in the pick and roll. And so I think there are a lot of good things, even though his shot has really, really abandoned him, and he keeps shooting regardless. So, yeah, that's it for Marcus.
Let's move on
to something else. We've talked
Bailey,
about Marcus.
Bailey asks us, who do you think is the worst playoff matchup for the Seas, Atlanta, Miami, or Charlotte? Personally, I want to avoid Atlanta the most. So going a little bit further back into the playoff discussion. I think Miami, I'd like to avoid Miami, because a lot of those, I mean, look, they've got the experience, and if they're fully healthy, if they get Bosch back, then that really makes things really difficult. Wade with rest in a playoff series, I think, is dangerous. And having Whiteside, although I'm not the highest on Whiteside right now, but I still think that he obviously makes life difficult. So I think I kind of want to avoid Miami. Charlotte would be great. I think Charlotte would be a fun first round matchup. So I
and by fun you mean the easiest of
yes.
those teams.
I
would agree. Charlotte is the team the Celtics would want to play the most of those teams. Miami, they've got Wade. They've got Dragic, who can put all sorts of pressure on you. They now have Joe Johnson, who's shot the ball really well in Miami and shot the ball really well, really, for the last 2 or 3 months. He was in Brooklyn, too. And then Atlanta is, like, really coming on strong. So Atlanta's had one of the better defenses in the NBA. So that would be a tough, tough matchup. I think either of those would be tough. All those teams are really, really kind of even, as you can see by the standings, I think. And then even Indiana, Chicago, those teams, those are scary teams too in ways. They have Paul George, Jimmy Butler, and some talented other players too. So there's no easy first round opponent in the East. And yeah.
Yeah.
Shoot for Charlotte.
Yeah, Charlotte would be the one I'd definitely want. I want to get this comment in from Danger Cart at Danger Cart, who, because we were just talking about the shooting, the Celtics shooting, is Raining Jays an ironic name for a Celtics podcast, or is it taunting, or is it really about a different team? So I just want to get that little shot at the Celtics shooting in. So, all right, old school shoes asks, I get Tayshaun Prince scored more points in the playoffs than the regular season as a rookie, 137 versus 141. Which rookie has a shot of a similar spike for the Celtics? I don't think if they're at full strength, there's no rookie who has a shot at that. But if we're talking about if they are still without Crowder for some reason and these rookies are getting a shot, I would say I'll go with Terry Rozier, because he's the guy that's been getting the most consistent time, and I think he'll get a chance to kind of play more just because of what they're doing to make up for Jay Crowder's absence. It really depends on if there is a rookie that's going to play, it's because somebody got hurt. and it depends on who's gotten hurt. So if it's the situation that we're in now, I think Rozier's probably got the best shot, but I wouldn't expect a rookie to play in the playoffs at all.
Yeah, I'm with you. If they're healthy, none of the rookies play. If it's an injury, I think Rozier looks like he's kind of separated himself. He's kind of been the guy Stevens has leaned on the most during the injuries to Crowder and Jarepko. And he's done a pretty good job. I think he's shown some intriguing flashes. And I think that's promising because earlier in the season, I didn't think he showed very much quality play when he was out there. And, you know, he's still raw. He still has a long ways to go. But he's starting to show, like, the outline of a pretty good, explosive two-way point guard. And as I said, he still has a long way to go. It doesn't come in, like, full stretches yet. But I think, you know, this past week he's really shown he's become intriguing. He's made himself intriguing. And I think Hunter has had some similar stretches during the season where his basketball IQ has really stood out, where his length has made a difference. But I do think Rozier looks like the guy Stevens trusts the most right now. And
this
so
goes into Josh,
that would be my
Josh
choice.
Hollingsworth asked which rookie deserves the most playing time. So going into this, you know, same type of conversation. Look, I'm obviously an unabashed RJ Hunter fan. Obviously he's got a lot of work to do. He made some mistakes against Toronto. Was it Toronto that he got those minutes?
Yeah, when he took the pass off the face and then had that really, really careless turnover and both led to runouts the other way and kind of let the Raptors get rolling there.
So Hunter in the fourth quarter, at the start of the fourth quarter, he was part of the collapse. But he also hit a couple of big shots. And he has flashes where he makes the right pass. He's got he's in the right place. And I think his shooting will eventually kind of pick up and become an NBA level shooter. I don't think he's ready quite yet. And Rozier, what makes him so different is I just think that he's got that athleticism. He's got a high level athleticism that allows him to do things, you know, play better defense, and at least when you're out and running, he can run faster than most people, and he can get up and finish at the rim. So I'll say that it's Rozier right now. So, but I think Hunter's ceiling is really, really high.
I'm going to go with Hunter deserves more minutes right now. And I say that because the Celtics' biggest issue, especially, you know, during when Kelly Olynyk was hurt and now that Jay Crowder's hurt, I think is shooting. That's their one biggest issue. And Hunter hasn't shot the ball great this year, either for Boston or for Maine. But of those three guys, including Rozier and Young, I think he's the guy who has the best chance to help your shooting. And, you know, he hit the really deep three against Toronto. He hit the other corner three to bring him within five heading into the fourth. And I just think with his quick release, with the way he can shoot the ball when he's rolling, I think maybe they should try him with those minutes. But, you know, I think right now there's not a really good answer there for which one deserves the minutes because none of them have really separated themselves from the others. And I think that's one of the issues the Celtics have had right now in trying to replace Crowder is that none of those guys really deserve the minutes that they've been getting. And that's, I think, been an issue.
So, okay. Magnus asks, outside of dropping to 7th or 8th, does it really matter where the Celtics end up? I think Cleveland and Toronto are the only teams to avoid. I don't think it matters. Honestly, it doesn't really matter because I never really expected the Celtics to get past the second round anyway. So if they match up with Toronto in the second round, if they get Cleveland in the second round, I know we want to avoid Cleveland until as much as possible, but does it really matter? Really?
Yeah. The thing I would say is I don't think the Celtics have a real chance to win the Eastern Conference. I do think if everything breaks right and they're healthy, they could give anybody, including the Raptors, a really good series. And maybe you sneak a couple games, maybe you even beat the Raptors. Who knows? But the key to me, when we talk about advancing the playoffs, I don't think it matters too much long-term whether they win one or two rounds. I think the biggest thing is you get that playoff experience. You get, you know, Marcus Smart with those more valuable minutes. You get Isaiah Thomas, who struggled against the Cavaliers last year, more minutes against defenses that have so much time to game plan against him. I think that's the real benefit long-term. And then the more time they are in the playoffs, the more time everyone can fawn over Stevens on national TV, and free agents maybe will be paying attention more to the Celtics at that time of year. So I think that would be the long-term benefit of going far in the playoffs, and that would be the long-term benefit of getting an advantageous draw in round one, round two, whatever. But really, this team, nobody expects them to win it, probably even two rounds, but definitely not three rounds. So does it really matter? Does it matter to you if they win one playoff series at least?
I would love for them to win a playoff series. I think it matters a little bit. I would really kind of be disappointed. Depends on who the draw is. If for some reason they fall to a point where they play Toronto in the first round, then you can't really, if they lose that series, you can't really fault them. But if they get Charlotte, and especially if they end up with home court and they get Charlotte, then that's something I would be disappointed if they didn't win that series. But it really just depends on the matchup. So you can't just blanket say, I would be pissed off if they didn't win one playoff series, because you just don't know. There's certain things, just dumb luck, you can't control. So Jay Crowder got hurt, and it happened at the worst possible time, and they're slipping in the standings, and other teams are leapfrogging you, and somehow, some way, it's all going to shake out however it's going to shake out, and if you get a bad matchup in the first round and you lose, then so be it. But if you get a good matchup in the first round and you still lose, then that becomes a little bit more disappointing, because that it shows that a lot of the regular season stuff might not have been as real as we thought it was. And that would kind of be a little painful. So it just depends. But I'm not, we'll see. I'd love for them to win a playoff series and prove at least that a lot of this stuff that we've been seeing, a lot of the success is legitimate, and that they're moving forward. But in the long term, it doesn't really matter, because Danny Ainge is going to do something this summer, something on draft night, and a lot of these guys may not even be here next year. So the guys who are getting the playoff experience might be using it for another team. So I think in the longer term sense, it may not really matter. But from a personal perspective, I'd like to see it.
Fair enough. Yeah, I don't think it really matters too much to their future. I do think it could, it could help, as I said, their development and just the way Stevens is looked at around the league. I think if he can coax a series win, or oh my goodness, two?
Oh yeah, that would be amazing.
Then if they get to the Eastern Conference Finals, and players are going to look at that like, whoa, like, look what he did with that bunch, and look at all they've accomplished. Look at all the young players they have. They're not too far away. So I think that's like the real benefit you would get out of it. So not crucial. I don't think that they have too much playoff success, but yeah, it would be helpful to win.
Okay. Next question from Wilfred. Re-sign Sully or sign a small forward, move Crowder to the four, and get pace and space that Brad wants?
Here's the thing about Sully. Are you sold that he will live up to whatever big contract he's going to get this summer. And he will get a big contract because he's a young guy who averages just about a double-double and is having the best season of his career. Do you trust him that he will stay in shape and live up to that next contract or maybe even exceed expectations in it? And I think it all comes down to whether you, the Celtics organization, believes that he's the type of guy who will stay hungry, no pun intended, during that next contract, because he's going to get a lot of money. And he's the type of guy, based on weight, injury issues, all that, there are concerns about that next contract. So that being said, he's really young and he rebounds very well. And I think he's been critical to their success, whatever success he's had this season. He's had, last couple months especially, he's played really, really well. And so, and when he's not on the court, and even when he is on the court sometimes, this is not a good rebounding team. He's become more of a center. So I think he does fit with the pace and space mentality. He's been, a plus defender this year. So he's a talented guy. But I think it all comes down to, is he going to earn his next contract? And I don't know the answer to that. I don't know what the Celtics feel about his mentality long term, and whether he's the type of guy who will continue to work and stay healthy, because health is has been a huge issue for him. He's finally been healthy this year, but he's had, basically two season-ending injuries. Last year he ended up coming back the last week or so, but basically two season-ending injuries, including the back and foot, which are like the two worst places a big man can get injured. So I don't know. He's going to get paid, and I don't know whether the Celtics will keep him around once he does. That I have no idea. That's an honest answer.
I think there's one thing that we need to really keep in mind moving forward contract-wise. Guys are going to get a lot of money. Yes. Jared Sullinger is going to get paid money that you wouldn't normally expect. Tyler Zeller is probably going to get paid more money than you would expect. But we have to keep it in proper perspective, because percentage-wise against the cap, they're not going to get more than they deserve. You know what I mean? Like, they're still going to get the, I think, proper percentage of the cap. I don't think they're going to get so overpaid. Even if Jared Sullinger gets $10, $11, $12 million next year, that sounds like a lot of money. Like, for Jared Sullinger, who I like and I think he does really well, but when you put that number with his name, that doesn't make any sense, right? To say he's going to get paid $11 or $12 million next year, that sounds ridiculous. But when you put it in perspective of what the entire cap is going to be, I think in the long term, it's not going to be that bad. Because percentage-wise, whatever you think he deserves, if you're thinking like right now he's probably, if I said $6 or $7 million for Jared Sullinger, that sounds about right, I think. You pay him $6 or $7 million to come off the bench or be a starter. I think that sounds about right, but that's in today's money. When the cap goes up and in the salary cap in a couple of years is up over $100 million, and you've got Jared Sullinger making 10% of your cap, that's nothing.
Are we sure Sullinger's only going to get $11 or $12 million?
I don't know.
I'm not.
You think he's going to get paid more?
I'm not. John Henson, who averaged 7 points and 4.7 rebounds last year, 6.6 and 3.8 this year, just got a 4-year, $44 million extension. John Henson.
Right.
John Henson. So, the money is going to get out of control. I will caution this. Yes, it'll be by a percentage of the cap,
But this year especially, because there are very few top free agents and everybody's going to have money, the contracts could get crazy even by that standard, because teams are just going to be throwing money at guys that maybe aren't the best players. And Sullinger isn't one of the best players, but he is good. He's a positive player. He helps, and he's young. So I'm not sure he'll only get 11 or 12 million. So
it's good. You're right.
I have no idea what he will get.
No, you're right. It's going to be
the landscape is nuts.
I think we all have to kind of, you know, prepare ourselves for what July will bring, because it's going to get stupid. Every team has money, and we know what happens when too many teams have money. It gets really ugly, really fast, to the point where I'm concerned about what this summer is going to do to the negotiations between the league and the players' union, because everything has been great. And in December, each side has the opportunity to opt out, which means the following year, the following summer, we could end up with some sort of work stoppage. If when all of this money is thrown out there, everything has been great. You hear the union talk, you hear the league talk, and they're very, very cordial, and everything seems to be going really well. And they just agreed to shorten the moratorium. They're talking. Everything's going great. It feels like they're going to get some kind of deal done. But this summer is such a wild card, and so many teams are going to have money, and they're going to screw it up. And I get the feeling that the owners are going to kind of want to get saved from themselves. They always do that. That's what the whole amnesty clause was. That's all of these things. The owners, when they get too much money, they make all of these crazy mistakes. And then they go to the players union. They say, look what happened. We can't be trusted. We got to do something. So I have this weird feeling like the insane amount of money that's going to be thrown around this summer is going to throw a kink into the negotiations, because guys are going to get some ridiculous contracts, and the teams are going to want to find a way to get out of those deals in 2 or 3 years.
John, predicting the next NBA lockout. Gloom and doom. The Celtics have lost 4 of 5, and a lockout is coming, people.
We've got questions about the draft coming up. Free Brady says, if the Celtics don't get the 1 through 3 pick, 1, 2, or 3, is it best to draft a shooter like Buddy or a big man like Bender? And Alex is asking about Buddy as well, another shooter. People are enamored with the shooters. The Celtics need shooting, and people are shooting the lights out, so I don't know.
People love Buddy. Buddy Hield. Everyone loves Buddy. I will say this. I've heard Bender is really, really good. I've spoken to talent evaluators across the league who are pretty enamored by Dragon Bender, who has a fantastic name.
I want to draft him just for the name.
Fantastic name.
But I've heard the same thing. I've heard people talk, and he seems to be the guy. That he's 7 feet tall, but he handles the ball and he shoots, and he's kind of like, people are calling him like the next Porzingis.
Yeah, I've heard like Porzingis might be a stretch. Porzingis is really good, but I've also heard that Bender moves like no 7-footer should move. So I'm throwing on the hype train, piling on top of the Bender hype train right here. I've heard he's good. I've never seen a kid play. I have seen Buddy Hield play, and he can really shoot it, and the Celtics really need shooting. But who knows? Danny Ainge doesn't always draft shooting. I will say that. Danny Ainge often drafts players who can't shoot and have high potential in a lot of other places. So, and that goes back to Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier, guys who the knock on them was shooting and finishing
especially in Rozier's case, coming out of college. But Ainge loved their mentalities and defensive potential, and the fact that they seem like they'll work hard enough to turn shooting into less of a deficiency and maybe even a positive down the road. So I don't know where they will go this year. Obviously, it depends where that pick ends up. But shooting has to be one thing they will look at on the free agent market and in the draft. The thing is, even if you draft shooting in the draft, it may not help right away. A lot of guys in the draft don't help you immediately and come in, take a while. I mean, look at Doug McDermott, for example. He was non-existent as a rookie in Chicago. Now he's starting to come on strong, and he's the shooter they need. But it wasn't in year one. It's in his case in year two. In some other cases, you look at J.J. Redick, took a while to crack a rotation. A lot of guys come in and need time to kind of season themselves, learn how to play defense, learn where to get their shots. So I don't know. This draft will be interesting, and the Celtics will be hoping that the Phoenix Suns win enough games to push the Brooklyn Nets back into third place of that lottery standing.
Yeah.
Because it's close right now. It's close. And Brooklyn for a while looked like they were going to surpass Phoenix in wins, and they have. But Phoenix coming on strong. Devin Booker. Celtics fans should be huge Devin Booker fans down the stretch.
Yeah. Man, you know, it's so hard with college shooting because there are guys who were great shooters in college that did manage to become great shooters in the NBA. And there are guys who are great shooters in college that can't play in the NBA. So,
hello, Jimmy Fredette, who was a lottery pick in the draft that Isaiah Thomas was the last pick by the same team.
It's unbelievable. So you don't know. And I don't know how good this kid will be or any of these great shooters will be in the NBA. They just have to go through the process, and you'll see who has the ability to make it work and who doesn't. But the problem is that it's such a different game. And that college three, I know that some of these guys have shown NBA range, but that's not a shot that they take consistently. And that college three is so much closer that you can step out and take a long three every once in a while, but people don't realize how far away that NBA three-point line is, especially the above-the-break threes. So, and the speed is different, and the style of play is different, and the defenses that you see are different. So it's hard. It's hard when you're a shooter to get out there and duplicate your college success in the NBA. So I would just say it's tough at the top of the draft to just say, I'm going to take this guy because he was such a good shooter. It's just no guarantee that he's going to be a great shooter moving forward. So, and we've got a questions about our draft binkies. I'm going all in on the dragon. Dragon Bender. I mean, come on. That's such a great name.
Names all get better.
You got it. I mean, there's so many possibilities. It's almost too many possibilities. It's too much pressure when you got a guy like that on your team. You too many nicknames.
I will caution this. Darko Milicic sounded like a great name.
It was a great name.
I would have bet the house on Darko Milicic succeeding in the NBA, not because of all the hype, but because a man named Darko should be a badass. And he was just bad.
He's bad.
So Dragon Bender has the name for it. Yes. I know very little about him other than that. I've never seen him.
No,
never seen
him. But the people who have seen him love him.
He looks intriguing and highly so.
Tyler asks, who do you think, do you think we could or should trade our Mavs pick and the 22nd pick to move up? And if so, for who? That's so tough.
It all depends at this point. I mean, obviously, I think you'll know a lot more about moving up on draft night than you do now. Last year,
they wanted to move up desperately on draft night because they targeted Justice Winslow. You have to have a target. You have to have somebody you like, and you have to have a team that's willing to trade you the draft pick. Right. So there's a lot of things that have to go right to draft, to move up. There's a lot of things, a lot of factors to consider when deciding whether to move up. One thing I will say is this isn't supposed to be a particularly deep draft. So moving up to who knows where might not be that advantageous. You might, depending on who's on the board, you might want to just, Celtics might want to just wait and, you know, pick twice and see what happens and have two chances to take a good player rather than
right.
one.
I mean, so, if we're just we'll looking see. At the draft board, I'm just trying to think of teams that might be willing to trade. I'm looking at a team like Orlando. They've got so many young guys. I don't know if you gave them a veteran, but I don't know who you could give up. Like, it's not just as easy as saying, here are two lower draft picks for your one higher draft pick. They're going to want something else. So I don't know, but I'm looking at Orlando, who may have too many young guys and may not need another one. Utah, Phoenix won't. So I think those two picks, like somewhere in the 10, 11, 12 range, might be interesting, but those draft night trades are so difficult. So unless you're doing something that involves another player, I don't know. But I think the Celtics will definitely be looking at a way to consolidate their talent, their assets. They don't need to make all of these draft picks. So I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't try to make some sort of trade, but it's a matter of what and who, or might be easier to trade picks into this draft. Like maybe you trade with the New York Knicks and they want to be in this draft. Probably they don't have a draft pick. So you say, here, you can get into the later part of the first round and draft a couple of potential role players. And we might get a draft pick down the road from you in a couple of years. Maybe do something that way. I think that might be a better way to go. But I've already said I'm a horrible GM, so maybe that's a terrible way to go. I don't know.
I almost made an Emerson joke there. Almost made the Emerson joke.
The Emerson guys who become GMs are good, I think.
Has Presti been a good GM? Obviously, you know him personally. And he drafted Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and Serge Ibaka, which are all knockout draft picks. Durant, I think everybody on earth would have picked him. Russell Westbrook, not the same case. Serge Ibaka was a steal later in the first round. Other than that, I'm not sold. He traded Harden. The rest of their roster outside of those three guys and Steven Adams, another great draft pick, stinks. So I'm not completely sold on Presti, although he's done a lot of great things in his career.
I think he's done a pretty good job. I wouldn't put him maybe in the top five, but I will also say that he has been hindered by the ownership that's been unwilling to pay a tax.
Yes.
So
yes,
the Harden trade, you can put it on him.
If they had the Celtics,
but yeah. Right.
If they had the Celtics ownership, they would have had Harden, Durant, right. Ibaka, and Westbrook forever and would have just been absolutely dominant.
So it's easy and understandable to say, well, he made that Harden trade. Yeah, but if you look at it maybe a little more deeply, that you know that owner, that he has been handcuffed a little bit. And speaking of the other, you know, since we're on Emerson GMs, I think Rob Hennigan in Orlando, the jury's still out on the job that he's doing there.
They have a lot of intriguing pieces.
They've got some good players.
They fit together weirdly, and none of them are like great players yet, but they're intriguing over there. I'm intrigued by that roster.
I think that if they make, I think he needs to make a couple of moves this summer to kind of make the fit a little bit better. Maybe, and he already started. They signed Tobias Harris, but then he turned around and traded him. They realize what they have to do. And he's not afraid to do that. Some GMs, you just signed the guy and they wouldn't make that move because they didn't want to look bad. But he at least has the ability to say, okay, we might have made a little bit of a mistake signing him, but we'll correct that. We can correct our mistakes. So, I think if he makes maybe a couple more moves to solidify that roster a little bit, maybe get some guys some minutes that haven't gotten them earlier, they could be okay. But I think most people might be waiting for another year or two to figure out exactly what kind of job he has done in Orlando. But I think they're on a positive path. So,
yep, agreed there. They are on a positive path. I don't know when or how they're going to get to where they need to go, but like Aaron Gordon, I used to like Elfrid Payton. Oladipo's had some really great games. I like him. Vucevic, solid low post score, good shooter for a big man. So they have a lot of tricky pieces. I don't know. They're weird. Weird team. Weird team that could like make the playoffs next year, or a weird team that could like need to blow it up next year.
Okay.
And I don't know which way they'll go. We'll see. I guess we'll see. That's the beauty of the NBA, always more basketball.
It's just, you never know. I do know this, that this show is just about over.
Yeah, we're talking about Emerson GM, so I think it's time to call this
one. I think this one is done. So.
Good GM. Though,
hey, you know? Yo, look.
Good pedigree.
That's right.
For those Emerson guys.
So let's wrap it up. I want to say thanks again to everybody for listening. I'm sorry we didn't have Mike Gorman on this week, but look, it happens only once in a while. Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you're on iTunes, go rate us 4 or 5 stars. It would be amazing. Get the word out there. Share it with your friends. Share it with the people you hate. As long as Celtics fans are listening to the show, please.
Don't rate us 4 stars. We're not a 4-star podcast. We're a 5-star podcast.
I was trying to be humble, Jay.
No, we're a 5-star. Hell, we might even be a 6-star podcast. But rate us 5 at least.
At least 5.
Maybe 6.
If you can somehow finagle the site to make it a 6th star. Or just, you know what, just draw it on your laptop or your phone. Just draw it. That'll work.
Rain and Jay, draw it on your laptop.
Okay, that's it. We're off the rails. And we'll see you next week on the Rain and Jay's podcast.